Blog Talk Radio.
Almost went on a soapbox there for a minute. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by
Smith, Wesson, and me. Dave Binkley from Working This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
Do you feel lucky, punks?
Dirty Harry flicks. Those are, you know, that's one thing you think about when you think about guns, right?
Yeah.
Dirty Harry flicks.
Oh, yeah, and his Magnum, 44 Magnum.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I shoot 5 bullets or 6? Do you feel lucky, punk? Hmm? Did we play 5 radio shows or 6? Do you feel lucky, punk? I would never call our listeners punk. So you guys are, we were just talking before we went on live on the air, how much we appreciate
we were, yes.
You guys in the comments and stuff like that. It just brings a tear to my eye. Well, stop it.
I think that's pollution, but, you know, go ahead.
It could be. Yeah, since I'm chain-smoking these generic cigarettes, probably is a little air pollution.
Open your window once in a while and you'll be able to breathe. Come on.
There are no windows in a basement. I am a cellar dweller from which we radiate, the cellar of Eerie House. We radiate and permeate the airways with some old-time radio. And this one's an old Silver Age program we have for you tonight. David,
absolutely.
A quick correction on how early this is.
Yeah, how early it was. I said it was the 8th episode. I was wrong. It was the 3rd episode. I think I had my glasses on backwards yesterday. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, you know? Maybe they were smudged and the 3 looked like an 8. But
but yeah, this is the 3rd episode. The first one starred a good friend, Hyman Browns, the one and only Agnes Moorehead. She only did 2 episodes, and after her second one aired, I think she had passed within 2 weeks after that aired. Now, he had recorded it quite a bit earlier, but she passed then. That's the only reason Agnes Moorehead wasn't in more of these radio mystery theaters.
Very fitting that she should be on the first one, Dave. Very fitting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With the story, I'm pretty sure we've shared it here. The old ones are hard to kill. I'm pretty sure we've shared that one here. And her second one, we didn't share that one yet. I'll look that one up. There's interesting to see some one-time guests. Sarah Jessica Parker was a one-time visitor to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Really?
So it'll be we have just so many of these guys that, you know, at the time they were playing Broadway, found out about it, wanted to join in. Fred Gwynn was doing a lot of Broadway at the time because the television just wouldn't see him as anything but Herman Munster. So he was here at the Mystery Theater quite a bit as he was doing Broadway. John Lithgow, quite a few, far more than I thought he did of the Mystery Theaters. And one of them particular that we have aired is a very particular favorite of mine, the Prisoner of the Machines. And we aired that quite a while ago. A great story with a great actor. And a lot of people come in one shot here and there, said, okay, I did it. That was cool. And off they go. But, I mean, I'm thinking Howard Da Silva, who was one of his blacklisted actors. He got to come back and do Broadway as they couldn't stop the Broadway actors. But they, you know, not only that, but it also brought him to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. So did some great episodes, including one we haven't aired here yet, The Other Self. It's a really kind of cool episode. We will get to that one because that is one of my favorites, as you know, along with like 800 others, you know.
Well, each one of them is very, very good, and tonight we're going to find out just how good they were right out of the gate with their very third episode.
Yes.
And it's fits right into our theme for the weekend with guns, and it's called The Bullet.
Yep. And this one will not disappoint. It's a good story, and a unique ending, I think. Sam Dan, who wrote more mystery theaters than any other writer, he wrote this episode, and Larry Haynes, who has been from the Golden Age of Radio to the Silver Age of Radio. Remember hearing a conversation with Larry and one other person did a lot of radio, but at the time he was doing soap operas, and they said, "Are you going to do this mystery?" He said, "Well, I think I may do a few," and he did quite a few. The only place I've ever seen him in a movie was in the movie version of The Odd Couple. He did the Broadway version. He was one of the poker players.
Really?
In the movie The Odd Couple by Neil Simon. And he was in the Broadway play, but he was also in the movie as one of the guys in playing cards. So
definitely doing it for good on radio here.
Yep.
Well, we might as well jump into this one.
Yeah, let's do that. With a correct date and a correct number and everything, yeah. And hopefully a correct part.
Yep. Episode number 3, The Bullet, from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, originally broadcast
January 8th of 1970. And 4.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Welcome to the sound of suspense, to the fear you can hear. For the next 52 minutes, I shall be your guide on a journey over a strange terrain. Some people find their names printed in the most unusual places. Let me tell you about a man who is convinced that his was written on a bullet.
Paul, get the password.
It's me, Jerry. It's me. Don't shoot. Paul. Dead, Jerry. It's Paul. Paul.
Paul, you're dead. How can you...
Yes, Jerry. I'm dead. But I shouldn't be. I took your bullet.
Our mystery drama, The Bullet, was written especially for the CBS Radio Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Larry Haynes. I shall be back shortly with Act One. It's a quiet little bar, Patty Noonan's. And Jerry Price stops there every evening on his way home from work. He's not looking for anything special in the way of atmosphere, adventure, companionship. And he has no intention of getting drunk. Just a couple of beers, perhaps, to bridge a busy day, to ease the fatigue, the strain on his nerves. In the comfortable half-light of Patty Noonan's, the world outside becomes vague, distant. Especially when old man O'Rourke is holding forth.
And he lay there, his head against the barricade, and the blood from him falling soft upon the pavement. I looked in his face, and I could see his death was upon him. 'Tis a bitter thing, I said, to die at 17. And for a moment, his darkening eyes held mine. And with his last strength, he said, 'Tis a sweet thing to die for Ireland.
Sweet indeed, Mr. O'Rourke. Any calls for one on the house?
Aye, thank you, Paddy Noonan.
Ah, I see, Jerry Price. Excuse me. Good evening, Jerry.
Hi.
I didn't notice you come in.
Well, when old man O'Rourke's in form, you don't see anybody, Paddy.
The old man there, he carries his war. I know I carry mine. You ever think of yours, Jerry?
No, never.
Never?
Nope. The day I came home from Vietnam, I put away the uniform. I also put away everything that went with it, the army, the war, like a snake sheds his skin. Now, the past is gone, Patty. It's dead, so you forget it. You go on to other things.
Hey, what's everybody drinking? This round's on me. Set him up, Patty.
Mr. Edward Clark himself. And what's the occasion?
Hey, I got a little announcement. Guess what the old lady tells me this morning? Number 10 is on its way.
Oh, in that event, the round must be on the house, Mr. Clark.
Just a quick one, Patty. Hey, I got the truck outside.
What are you hoping for this time, Ed? Boy or girl?
Let's see. What do I got now? Four boys and five... I got five boys and four... who can keep them straight? All I know is I'm always tripping over somebody. Yeah. 10 kids in 12 years.
Well, you can't tell me it isn't exciting to hear there's going to be a new baby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know it's going to be a kid who'll wet its pants and keep me up half the night. That's another mouth I got to feed. Yeah, well, guys, I got to ride. I'll see you tomorrow.
You know, Patty, it's funny. People who don't want kids, can't stand kids, can't afford them, can't raise them, they can't help getting kids. Whereas, oh, well, guess there just isn't any justice in this world.
Well, there may be no justice, Jerry, but there's always hope. How long have you been married?
Right after I got out of the Army, it'll be 9 years.
The fellow used to come in here, and they were married 15 years before they had their first.
Am I really out of the Army 9 years? Tell me, Patty, you're an old philosopher. Where does it go, huh?
Down the hatch and try another.
Yeah, don't mind if I do. Oh, wait on the paying customer first.
Where?
The fella standing at the end of the bar.
What are you saying, Jerry? There's nobody standing at the end
in
of the...
In the brown hat and a raincoat.
Now, Jerry, what are you saying?
I know. That's Paul.
Tell me, what's the matter, Jerry?
Paul.
Jerry, listen to me. There's no...
Paul. Hey, he was just standing here. Where'd he go? Where is he?
Jerry, where is who? Are you all right, Jerry?
Yeah, I'm all right. But I saw him.
Who?
Oh, a guy I was in the Army with.
The two of you. Were you close?
He was my buddy.
Well, when was the last time you saw him in person?
The night he was killed.
Have you ever seen him again? Like you thought you did just now?
No. No, this is the first time.
Well, maybe you need a rest, Jerry.
Patty, why now? Why tonight after all these years?
Well, you say you saw him last the night he died in battle. Well, the sight of him dead must have stayed with you always.
But that's not how I just saw him, Patty. He wasn't in uniform. He was in civilian clothes.
You might have pictured him as he looked at a happier time.
I never saw him in civilian clothes. We met in the Army. And, Patty, I didn't see him as he was then. We were both kids, about 20. I saw him the way he'd look today, about 30. His face was more mature.
Jerry, are you sure he's dead?
He is dead, Patty. I just saw him. I know I saw him.
Jerry, it's after midnight.
Oh, I'm not finished, honey. I have to clean up these reports, Marge.
Honey, a new rule has just been passed in this house. All paperwork shall be done in the daytime.
Marge, I have to call on customers. Be reasonable, huh?
Am I the kind of wife who makes idle criticism? No, indeed. Constructive suggestions, that's my motto. Northeast Distributors can solve all your paperwork problems by hiring a girl.
Honey, I'm lucky to have the job.
No, Jerry. You're not lucky. They're lucky. Well, everybody knows you're a terrific salesman. Well, you can get another job tomorrow. More money, less headache.
Honey, I couldn't walk out on Joe Keller.
Why not?
Well, I'll never forget what that man did for me. I came home from the Army, a kid with no experience. I needed a job. He took a chance with me. Now he needs me.
Well, I'm just worried about you, Jerry. You look so tired all the time.
No, I'm in great shape.
Will you go see Doc Steiner?
I did, today.
Oh, well, it's about time. You needed a checkup.
Well, I didn't just go for the checkup, honey. I went for the other thing.
Jerry.
Well, he said some people, men, well, they're okay in every way, but it just doesn't work out for them.
Jerry, it's all right.
No, honey. It's all my fault.
Oh, honey.
It's, well, it's just unlikely there can ever be any kids. He said unlikely. What he meant was impossible.
We've got each other.
Yeah. If only you didn't want a child so badly.
Now we'll definitely think about adopting, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes that works out even better. Come on, honey, let me see you smile.
Marge, I don't know what I'd do without you.
Oh, that makes us even. I don't know what I'd do without you. Come on, get to bed.
Yeah, I'll just have a cigarette, huh? Honey, why'd you turn on the music?
To make sure you don't try to sneak in some work. I know you can't concentrate with the music going.
I'll just be a couple of minutes, honey.
Halt! Let's hear that password.
Paul, is that you?
Jerry. Hey, climb down the hole. Make yourself at home.
Man, I'm so beat I can't even remember the password.
That's all right. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, got a cigarette?
What'd they want back at the CP, Jerry?
A patrol.
You going?
Yep.
But you went out yesterday.
Well, maybe I better write to my congressman, huh?
I don't have any more cigarettes. Here, finish this one.
Paul, I don't know if I can go out again. We're being relieved tomorrow. We were promised a rest. I just don't know if I can go out again.
But you ain't going out, Jerry. Didn't you hear? I'm gone.
Oh, no.
I'll say you and I made a trade.
No, Paul, I can't let some other guy
but
do...
But I'm not some other guy. I'm your buddy. What's the matter, Jerry? You never did it for me? Can I have a drag on that butt, Jerry?
Paul, you're alive.
I'm alive, Jerry. I'm here with you, in your living room.
Oh, no, you can't be here. I went out afterward. I found your body. I carried it back. Maybe it wasn't you.
It was me.
But you were dead. You were killed.
Yes, Jerry. I was killed.
Jerry, will you turn that radio off and come to bed?
Marge, he's here.
Who's here?
Can't you see him?
Jerry, I don't see anyone.
Paul, why can't she see you?
She will. They all will.
When?
Later. I have to go now, Jerry.
No, Paul. Paul, tell her.
Jerry.
She'll think I'm crazy, Paul. Paul. He's gone, Marge. He's gone.
Jerry, honey, what's going on here?
Marge, he was here. He was right here. Now, you got to believe that. I'm not drunk, and I'm not crazy.
I believe you. I believe you, Jerry. Now, here, just sit down. Don't do anything. Don't say anything.
And we know who she's calling. But can a doctor help what ails Jerry? In a moment, we'll return to Jerry and Marge and Paul. When we listen to Act Two.
I'm High Brown, producer of Radio Mystery Theater. And as you may imagine, I'm excited about this new adventure in modern radio, this new statement of radio's marvelous power to stir the imagination. Now, we're wondering about your reaction, about who you are and how you like what we're doing. So to encourage you to get in touch with us, we're holding a drawing for 3 weeks. 50 prizes a week, 2 AM-FM stereophonos, 2 travel clock radios, and 46 anthologies of modern suspense. Just mail us your name and address, and you're eligible. Of course, we'd like knowing whether your glad radio drama is back, but name and address will do it. To Mystery Theater, Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. That's Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. Offer good everywhere unless locally prohibited.
Yeah, let's write in, Dave.
I tell you what, they were so overwhelmed, both in number and in comments, from that particular plea for, hey, are you listening? What do you think? It was just, I think even Hyman Brown was even just flabbergasted. It's just, he wanted to bring it back for all of the people that loved old-time radio dramas and found that young people were listening too. He brought in a whole new generation of people he never expected to get, the people like
and,
me.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were one of them, Dave. To,
I was.
To latch on to that early on. And they had a heck of a run. They ran from 74 to 80 what? 81, 82?
81, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just shy of 1,400 episodes, I think. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and fortunately, most of them are in existence, I believe.
Most of them, I think all of them have been recorded one way or another. Most of these have been saved. So many of these come from Chicago. Some come from Dallas and New York and then Seattle. Radio stations collected these, and eventually they got out to collectors, and collectors put them together, and this is how we saved it. None of these are from any of the masters of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. None of these that we bring you.
Fortunately, they were collected and available. And with that kind of variety alone from the weight of two shows, really, Suspense and CBS Radio Mystery Theater, we don't have to repeat stuff for a long, long time, folks. Especially when
That's
you mix
right.
in all the other radio programs that Dave finds for us. Themes them up week to weekend. Yep.
I'm sorry, what was that?
No, you theme them up and create the weekend,
yeah,
and then...
Yeah. No, there's some things going on behind me here that I have no control over, so...
That's what a taser is for. That's what a taser is for. Oh, my. CBS Radio Mystery Theater number 3. And it is. It's just as good. I mean, from the very beginning, the intro, it just hooks
yeah.
you. You just get hooked, and it's a great production.
It just keeps getting better. Just one of those, again, one of my 850 favorite episodes.
There you go. Here's part 2. We'll be back. Maybe.
And now, Act 2 of The Bullet. Let us trace the path of the bullet. We have a worried Marge, a concerned Dr. Steiner, and a distracted Jerry.
Tell me about this man, Paul, you called in Jerry.
I said we were buddies, Doctor. That tells it all.
Jerry, please don't be so hostile. Dr. Steiner's only trying to help.
You were buddies. You came back alive and he didn't.
Yeah.
There's an extensive medical literature on the subject.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Jerry.
I'm not being hostile, Marge. I know I saw him.
Of course you saw him.
Well, finally.
But that doesn't mean he was there. You see, Jerry, the death of a wartime comrade remains an eternal reproach. All who survive are sentenced forever to feelings of guilt.
No. Doctor, the wars are fought by kids in foxholes. The literature is written by doctors and officers.
That's hardly fair, Jerry.
I'm the authority on war, Doctor, because I was a kid in a foxhole. And I don't feel guilty about my buddy.
You don't?
No.
Tell me why.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
Try me.
All right. You see, there's a bullet. And it's designed especially for you. And if it's your bullet, it'll find you no matter where you are. You can't evade it. You can't avoid it. It was meant for you. It was meant to be. You and the bullet. Both of you were dust originally. You were dust because the Bible says so. And the bullet was also just dust in the ground. Well, that bullet was mined and refined and cast into metal. It was shaped into a slug and joined with a shell.
It was one of billions of bullets, but it was yours, all yours. And at the right time, there'd be a tremendous explosion of gases in the narrow chamber, and a bullet would be torn loose from the shell case and spun around the grooves of a gun barrel and hurled through space. This is the bullet you don't hear. You don't hear it, Doctor. You don't hear it whine past your ear or ping off a rock or thwack against a tree. That's because it's your very own bullet. It's coming to meet you, or you're going to meet it. It's been arranged. You see, it's an appointment that can never be broken. The dust that had become the bullet would encounter the dust that had become you. And after a while, both of you would become dust once again and return to the ground, your original home.
Jerry, I know you're overworked, you're overwrought, you're overtired.
I keep telling him to slow down.
Okay, I know I'm under a strain. I know I'm working too hard, but what can I do?
Jerry, try to understand. Right now, you're having what is popularly known as a nervous breakdown. This alleged visitor from another world. I say he's an illusion. I say you have subconscious feelings about him that you're not aware of. And I say they burst through because of heavy pressure on your nervous system.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that.
Prove me wrong.
How?
Go away. Get out from under. Rest a while. Relax.
Oh, honey, this looks like a good spot. You want to stop here and try for some fish?
Well, Marge, I think I'd like to go back and play nine holes this afternoon.
Great. I need more practice with my iron.
Honey, you know, you've been getting a lot of sun. Maybe you better take it easy for a few hours, huh?
And besides, you have an appointment with, what's that name? Biscayne Appliances. See, Jerry, I wasn't sleeping when you called that number this morning.
Now, Marge, I've been good all month. I was just getting restless, that's all. Look, they're a big chain down here. If I can open them up, I'll justify the trip.
Justify? To whom? Why do you have to justify anything? Isn't your health important enough?
Honey, Joe Keller was very nice about it.
Joe Keller had no choice.
Marge. Honey, Steiner was right. I was beat. I don't know how I managed to drag myself along. So I did the right thing. I chucked it all. Now I'm fit, see? I never felt better in my life, and I'm raring to go.
Great. In a month or two, we may think about going back.
I'm not used to being idle, honey.
Neither am I, but I am learning to love it.
Oh, boy. Why didn't I meet you when I was young?
Young? Jerry, you weren't even 21.
No, I was already made when we met. I had already become what I was going to be. You know, I've got a certain amount of ability.
A tremendous amount, Jerry.
But I'm not confident, honey. I doubt myself. I guess I didn't have very much encouragement when I was a kid. You know, my brother was a great athlete. My sister was a great beauty. I was kind of clumsy and funny looking. Anyway, Frank and Alice were sent to college. When my turn came, the money had run out. Or maybe they thought I wasn't worth the effort. That's why I enlisted when I was 18. I had to get away from the house and my father. There was no place else to go.
You never told me this, honey.
I decided if I ever had a kid, I'd never make jokes at his expense or tear him down in any way. I know how these things cut inside where it doesn't show. I would do everything to build him up and give him confidence. I will never have any real confidence, Marge.
Oh, yes, you will.
No, baby. You won't get it from a pep talk. I think we can go back home now, Marge.
All right, on one condition. You'll just have to slow down.
I promise.
And, honey, there's only one way you can really slow down. And that's to get a partnership from Joe Kelly.
No, Marge.
Don't you deserve
it? Of course I do.
Well, we're going to adopt a child. Which means I'll quit my job, and you're not going to spend time on the road. That kid will need both of us, won't he?
Yes. Yes, honey, he will.
Then we need that partnership, don't we?
Hey, baby. You look like $1 million. That's 2% for cash, of course.
Yeah, Joe.
No, hold it. Ramona, no calls. I'm in a meeting. I can't be disturbed.
Well, anyhow, Joe, hello.
I want you to take it easy for a while, you hear?
Yeah, I'm ready for action, Joe.
Oh, you think you're ready. Now, listen. I know you had a lot of expenses. I want you to take this little check. It's only $500. I'm strapped for cash this week. I had to pop for a whole new computer setup. But anyway, I decided to increase your bonus to 5%. That'll amount to a pretty sweet raise, huh?
Now, Joe...
Don't thank me, kid. You're entitled to it. We got to make sure you don't get sick again.
Joe, I have to talk with you.
Well, sure, kid. What about?
Well, it's personal and important.
Well, let me buy you lunch. Well, Jerry, what are we going to talk about? I'm fresh out of polite conversation.
Joe, I want a partnership.
No, you don't, Jerry.
But, Joe...
No, don't interrupt. You don't want one. You'd like one. Two different things.
Don't nitpick, Joe.
You'd like a partnership, which means it would be swell. Great if you had it. But want is something else. It means lack. It means need. I know you'd like to own a business, but you're not cut out to be an owner.
Why?
Because an owner is an officer. And in your heart, you'll always be an enlisted man. Tell me, could you ever fire a guy because you could get someone else cheaper? If an old customer, a good friend, was getting slow paying bills, could you cut him off? Thousands of guys like you go bankrupt every year. You're nice, sweet, big-hearted. But you don't have the guts business needs.
Well, I'd like to remind you of the volume I sell.
I know it to the penny, Jerry, and you're well paid for it.
Well, I'm worth more now.
You are. You got a sweet raise this morning.
Joe, don't think I'm not grateful. You gave me my first break. But I think I can do better elsewhere.
Where?
Anywhere. Consolidated, Freeman and Singer. Should I go down the list?
Oh, they'd love to have you, Jerry. What'll they pay? They handle the nationally advertised brands. What'll you be, their glorified order taker? They don't need your full selling ability, so they don't have to pay you full price for it. Sure, with me, you push out all the schlock. It's rough, but you get top dollar. There's 20 outfits like mine. They grab you tomorrow, but where's the improvement? They won't pay you more. At least here, you got 9 years equity in a pension plan. You and me are used to each other. Besides, I really like it. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like a father to you, Jerry.
It was a fiasco, Patty, a fiasco. And how do I break it to Marge?
What's it all about, Jerry?
Well, at least I don't have to put up with Ed Clark tonight. I think I'd punch him right in the mouth.
We'll be deprived of his wonderful company the next 2 weeks. He's tooling that trailer into the Southwest.
Hello, Jerry.
What? Patty, is someone standing behind me?
No, Jerry.
Paul, will you tell me why?
I'll tell you everything, Jerry.
When?
Soon. I think maybe tonight.
Paul, why do you keep popping in like this?
I don't know, buddy. I can't control that.
Yeah, but Paul. Patty, don't you see anyone?
No, Jerry.
You didn't hear anyone talking to me either.
No.
Patty, do you think I'm crazy?
Well, maybe you should see a doctor.
I saw a doctor.
Well, how about one of them psychiatrist fellas?
I never even told my wife. I did see a psychiatrist. But after a while, I figured, why pay him $50 an hour when I can come in here and talk to you for nothing?
Well, there must be more to them fellas than that.
Oh, sure. He said that the roots of my problem go back to my unhappy childhood. But, Patty, I have a brother, Frank, who feels terribly insecure. He goes to a psychiatrist, too. Why? He had a happy childhood.
Well, put it this way. If you see someone and I don't, the flaw can be in me and not in you. Drink?
No. I better go home and face the music.
Jerry.
What? Paul.
Let's go someplace and talk.
Where?
Let's go to the parking lot. Sit in your car.
It's cold. That won't bother you, will it?
Not yet. Turn the heater on for yourself.
When will everyone else be able to see you, Paul?
In 2 weeks.
Oh, that's great.
No, it ain't.
Why not?
Because you'll be dead.
Because you'll be dead. Cold words from a warm friend. The chill inside the car becomes intense. But Jerry knows there's no point in turning on the heater. We'll rejoin these two friends when I return shortly with Act 3.
Yeah, I'd be real careful what I do in that car, especially if it's Christine.
Yeah. I promised you a good story tonight, Dale. I got you one.
I'm hooked with the story. Good old Bob joins us in the chat with Fogsbane. Welcome, welcome all.
All are welcome. All are welcome.
Yep.
So say it's a poltergeist lady.
Sitting back with some favorite old-time radio. It's hard to believe something in my time is considered old-time radio. But, you know, my shows that I've gotten have been kind of bunched in with that as well. I thought it was pretty cool that they're bunched in my radio dramas in with the old-time radio. I thought that was pretty cool. And that's,
yep.
And I look at it now, that's been 23 and 22 years ago when I did these shows, the radio dramas I wrote and produced.
Yep.
Just wow.
Where does the time go?
I don't know, but why isn't retirement here yet? That's what I want to know.
Yes. That was yesterday's pre-show.
But this is an amazing episode here. My brother and I used to, we'd come on, we'd say Sam Dan, the garbage man, whatever, but one of his stories would come along. But and here's the thing I found about his stories. The better the title, the story wasn't quite as good. But if he had a title that was, you know, it was a much better episode. So the story wasn't so good sometimes, so he put this effort into making a good title. But he's right on. He's right on with a number one with a bullet on this show tonight.
With a bullet. Yuck.
But, yep.
I'm curious what happens here. And believe me, we do have some bonus features for you tonight. Yes, we do. We'll get into that a little bit later on.
Yeah, well, one thing you'll find with some of the, especially some of the earlier and some of the later episodes towards 90 and 91 or 80 and 81 is not, there weren't as many commercials recorded a lot of times. Unless you got the WOR recordings early on, that you didn't get a lot of the commercials. Because if people were recording them on their cassettes, if you would cut out the commercials, or what we did in our case, we left like one commercial in between each segment, and by doing that you could get it, fit it all onto a one side of a 90 minute cassette, so on the that way you could get two episodes to have with you, and in each break would have one spot.
Yep. And thank goodness a lot of those, this one doesn't tonight, but a good thing a lot of those have the old commercials save, because that's part of the time capsule, I think.
You know, of our era, more than probably any other, they're in the 70s and 80s. Everything was done with jingles, whether it was station call letters or a commercial or whatever. They used jingles, and there were people you never knew who they were, who were doing jingles for people all around the country and singing them. And it was an amazing time, because now you're lucky to get anything creative in a commercial, period.
The only jingles I hear now, and it's sad to say, are like medicines.
Yeah.
A couple that
is, I could, I bet. Yeah.
Ozempic is an earworm. But a great program. CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Let's wrap it up. We'll be back after the conclusion of The Bullet.
And now we return to the final act of The Bullet, and a reunion of two war buddies who haven't seen each other in almost 9 years. Jerry Price, who is alive, and Paul Gardner, who is dead.
The heater in this car doesn't do much good. You're shivering.
Why am I going to be dead, Paul?
Remember the night I went out on the patrol?
Yeah, I'll remember that night as long as I live.
I completed my job. I was headed back. And then I felt something smash against my head. And I knew. I knew I just met the bullet. You know, the bullet we used to talk about? I bet you don't remember.
No, I remember. I remember.
I felt it slam into me. And then I didn't know anything anymore.
Yeah, well, when the guys told me, I went out to get you, Paul.
Yeah, I might have known you would. One minute, I was moving through a rice paddy. And the next minute, I'm sitting in an office. And I knew a lot of time had gone by. Don't ask me how. I knew, that's all. A man was talking to me.
What kind of man?
You know the type. It's a clerk in the government or a big corporation, fussy, self-important. Everything's got to be in the right place. He doesn't even look at me. He's got a piece of paper. He says, Paul Gardner, you're going back. You should not have died that night. The computation was for you to survive. The plan was for you to marry a girl named Marjorie Stone.
I married Marjorie Stone.
Yeah. I told the guy. I want no part of
him. Matter, honey.
He gives me a look, this clerk does. Like he couldn't care less about me or you or anybody else. And he says, come with me. He leads me to a door. It opens, and all I can hear is a hum and a click, and all I can see is a computer. I mean, there's no end to the thing. That's all you can see is computer. And he says, there it is, friend. City Hall. Go fight it. By this time, I'm shaking. That machine scared the pants off me. You couldn't see the top nor the bottom of it. There was no end to it, just machine, wherever the eye could see.
Well, then what happened?
This clerk, he tells me there's a plan, a capital P plan. It calls for me to come home, not you.
Yeah, well, maybe that's fair, Paul. You were always the better man.
No, you got more on the ball. You never got a break, that's all. I had a chance to go to school, become somebody. I could have gone into the old man's business, become the biggest hardware dealer in Atlanta. You and me. We both run away to join the army. You because you had nothing. Me because I had everything.
But why are you coming back?
Because Marge and I are supposed to have a boy. A certain kind of a boy. He'll grow up, I don't know, discover something, create something, or be somebody the world needs real bad. They wouldn't tell me what. Anyhow, 40, 50 years from now, he has to be here. And of all the millions of men and women, he could only be born to me and Marge.
When am I leaving?
I told you. In 2 weeks.
How?
9 o'clock at night. A trailer truck will go past Patty Noonan's saloon. Just as you're crossing the street.
Well, why does it have to be like that?
Because you don't know how careful these things are figured. You could get killed a million ways. But the plan calls for a truck driven by a guy named Ed Clark.
Oh, yeah, I know Ed Clark.
He doesn't have a good record, so it'll be easy to prove he's a careless driver. He works for a big outfit, so Marge will have a good settlement.
But why? I still don't understand.
She'll need the money. You see, I won't be a good father. Not as good as you, for sure. Oh, I'll love the kid. I'll love Marge, but I won't be there a lot. You know me. I have to keep moving.
But if you know how important it is for the kid...
I won't know. Once I'm alive, I won't remember any of this.
And you say it's all figured out. Maybe not. The human element. How can the machine predict Marge would go for you, huh?
With all due respect, Jerry, did I ever have any trouble landing any dame I had my sights on?
With all due respect, I can't see Marge falling for your line of chatter.
She will, Jerry. I'll be there when she's having a bad time. She'll be all alone. She'll need somebody. Things will take their natural course. Sure, she'll see through my line, but after a while, she'll get to like it. I'm different. You're quiet. I raise hell. You let things eat at your inside, not me. I pop off. Maybe my way's no better in the long run. And she's married to you, and she loves you. But deep in her heart, she loves my way better. She'll fall in love with me. Jerry, you have to believe I don't want to do this. Was your bullet, not mine.
Jerry?
Hmm?
What are you thinking about?
Oh, a guy downstate wants to cancel a carload of refrigerators, so I'm figuring an approach.
Didn't we agree no more work at home?
Yeah, well, honey, this is just thinking.
Did you talk to Joe Keller about the partnership?
Yeah.
And?
He said no.
Did you give him notice?
No, he gave me a raise.
Oh. Okay.
Marge.
Why don't you mix us a drink?
Honey, aren't you going to say anything?
Mm-hmm. Don't put in too much ice.
Marge, please, you don't understand.
I understand. I married a certain kind of man.
And you're stuck with him?
No. I'll stick by him. Because I love him.
Would you have wanted a guy who'd barge into Joe Keller's office and say, Joe, either give me half a joint or I'll open up across the street and run you out of business?
Oh, come on,
Jerry. Answer me, Marge. I have to know.
Well, maybe I did.
Why didn't you marry him?
He never showed up.
So you settled for me.
That's what's known as falling in love. Come on, honey, take me to the movies.
No, I don't want to take you to the movies. Let's go downtown and see a play.
But that's a lot of money.
Are you going to worry about money? Now, and look, this weekend, would you like to fly out to, say, Snow Valley and ski? Yeah, or how about Las Vegas, huh?
Jerry, what's gotten into you?
Honey, we're going to have 2 weeks of the most fantastic
Why
fun.
Why 2 weeks? What's so special?
You? Me? I just want to spend the rest of my life having a ball with you.
Stranger.
I haven't seen you. Why, it must be weeks.
Where have you been?
Oh, giving Marge a good time.
Well, I must say, it's done wonders for you. You look so calm.
Do I?
Do you ever see the little guy who wasn't there?
No.
Well, that's good. Let's drink to it. Jerry, if I'm not being forward, what did he want from you?
You wouldn't believe it, Patty.
Do you believe it?
Well, I just dropped in to say hello, Patty, and goodbye.
Jerry.
Yep.
Something's the matter with you.
Well, I understand Ed Clark is due back here tonight. I don't want to run into him. I just don't want to talk to him.
Well, if that's how you feel, I'll bar him from the joint. Now, Jerry, something's wrong with you.
No, nothing, Patty.
Now, look, I'm an old soldier, Jerry. I can tell.
No, it's really nothing.
Really, is it? No, Jerry, you got a look on your face.
What kind of look?
I've seen it before in the war. I've seen it on men who go out on the impossible mission. The look of men who know they're not coming back. The resigned look. What are you resigned to, Jerry?
You have a vivid imagination.
I have an imagination. Jerry, whatever it is, don't be resigned to it. Fight it.
You can't fight City.
I knew it. You're in a fight, Jerry. Well, you can fight anybody. You're an ex-combat soldier, and you weren't afraid of anything. When you were out there, you faced up to death, hunger, despair. What happened to you, Jerry? Where did you lose it? Face up to it now. Whoever he is,
spit in his eye.
Patty, I can't do anything.
Jerry, I'm going to throw you out of here for your own good. Now leave. Leave town. Go far away for a while. Fight it, Jerry. Fight it.
Patty, wherever I go.
Listen to old Patty. Just take off.
Don't you see there's a plan?
Who cares? Put up a fight.
Why are you so upset, Patty, huh?
I don't know. But listen to me. Fight now. Now get out of here.
Jerry. I decided to fight it.
Good boy, Jerry.
You know, Patty, there's something about your place. I don't know how to say it, but I feel stronger, better, away from it.
Well, I don't mind.
So I'm going to fight. What have I got to lose, huh? Why should I do what he tells me? Why should I believe him?
I don't know what it is, but I agree.
I'll see you around, Patty.
Universal Airlines, flight number 3 for Los Angeles and Mexico City, now boarding at gate 17.
Who are you calling, Jerry?
Marge, I have to tell him.
Oh, Jerry, don't do it this way. There'll be 100 other people on that plane. Do it the way it has to be done.
Paul, I have to fight you.
Why?
Because it isn't fair.
Was it fair for me to stop your bullet? Come on, Jerry. Ed Clark will be tooling by Patty's in less than an hour.
Paul, I don't know if I have the nerve.
I'll help you, buddy. I'll help you. Come on.
Hello? Hello? What is it, Mr. Noonan?
I called you, and I hope it wasn't out of turn, Mrs. Price. It's about Jerry.
What about Jerry?
He's sitting back there in a booth. Now, wait. Don't go to him yet. He's in trouble.
Well, it can't be. We've had such a glorious 2 weeks.
He's in trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I don't know. We have to help him somehow.
Is it that Buddy?
I think so.
Well, the time has come to lay that nonsense to rest once and for all, and I'm going to...
That won't work. Agree with him. Show him anything he wants is okay with you. Don't fight him. All we can give him is love.
Hi, honey.
Hi.
Buy me a drink.
Oh, sure. You know, I never knew you had those little gold highlights in your hair.
Oh, I'm using a different bottle this week.
I love you.
I love you, too. And I want you to be with me always.
Come on, Jerry. Let's start.
No, not yet.
Are you talking to me?
The plan calls for it.
How do I know there is a plan?
Ask anybody. Ask Marge.
Jerry, what are you talking about?
Marge. Marge, do you believe there's a plan that determines the actions of everybody in the whole world?
No.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Well, then how do you think things work out?
Well, every which way.
Come on, Jerry. It's time.
No, I won't go.
Where won't you go?
Then, Marge, as far as you're concerned, there isn't any plan.
Oh, well, what do you think, Jerry?
No, that's not important. What do you think?
Well, yes. Yes, there is a plan. I can prove it.
You can?
Yes, but you started me thinking there has to be a plan. Otherwise, you and I, we just never would have met. Remember that day?
Yeah. You were taking cash at Ryman's drugstore. That's the only reason I walked in there.
Well, I'd already given notice I was going to leave. And then you walked in and asked Doc if you could open a charge. Then and there, I decided to stay.
And where? Where were you going?
Oh, away. Pull up stakes.
Why?
Well, my folks were gone. My friends were married. Neighborhood had changed. The girl I went to school with had a father, a construction engineer. He'd been transferred. Well, she took a job in his new office, and she wrote and said she found a nice crowd. They needed secretaries down there. She could fix it up. Well, why not? I was set to go. But it was not to be. You came wandering into Ryman's. Obviously, there's a master plan that rules our lives.
And where was this wonderful place you almost went to?
Atlanta.
Atlanta?
Oh, what's so remarkable about that, Jerry?
It was definite you were going.
Well, sure.
And only because you met me.
Only because I met you. Otherwise, I'd have gone to Atlanta and married a southern millionaire. But evidently something had been planned for me. Aren't you flattered? I met you, and it changed my whole life.
Are you ready to go now, Jerry?
Marge, will you come with me?
Yes, Jerry. Where do you want to go?
Well, I have to do something.
I'll come with you.
No, wait here, darling, please.
It's time, buddy. Just like going out on a patrol.
Jerry, where are you going?
That's all right, Patty. It's all right.
I didn't want this, buddy.
I know. I don't want you to take my bullet either.
Goodbye, Jerry.
Yeah, goodbye, Paul. Take care of her for me, huh?
You know I will. Let me throw this coat over you.
She's going to faint.
It's all right. I've got her. We'll bring her into that bar where it's warm. Give her a little stimulant. It's all right. Everything will be all right. Everything will be... It'll be all right.
So many people preface what they believe with, "It is written." It is written in the stars. It is written on the wind. And for so many like Jerry, it is written on the bullet. I'll be back shortly. I remember an old soldier once told me he wasn't worried about the bullet that had his name on it. What really bothered him was the bullet marked, "To whom it may concern." Our concern is mystery, excitement, suspense, thrills, and chills. Our cast included Larry Haynes, E.V. Juster, Martin Newman, Ralph Bell, Leon Janney, and Danny Acco. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser, and by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. Now, a preview of our next tale.
The only way to learn how to swim is to jump in the water, right? Well, that's what you need, Julia.
I simply can't make you understand, can I?
Well, maybe I can make you understand. Ah, forget it. You want to get that dinner ready? I'm hungry.
Yes, I'm going now.
Look, why don't you change first?
Change?
Yeah, your clothes. Get more comfortable.
Yes, I think I'd like to do that, George. I won't be long.
Take it easy. That's my surprise. That's it. Tell
him. Get him out of here. Please, George. Take him away.
It's only a dog, for Pete's sake. He's not going to hurt you.
Get it out, George. Please.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time.
Macabre.
Dreams.
I like macabre.
Macabre.
Macabre. Oh, faded to the end. Also, It might fight the urge. I don't know. We got anything to learn from this?
We do a bit, I guess.
All right, let's give it a fly. Put it in the water, see if it floats. Erie House Radio proudly presents Agarwa's Moral of the Story.
It's going down for the third time. Anyway, having my name on a bullet is a bit too dangerous for me. I'd rather have my name on a Roman burger. I'll risk the mayonnaise and dressing.
I absolutely adore Roman burgers. It's one of the greatest things on earth. One of my favorite guilty pleasures.
One time, if you're ever in the area, we got to go over to Mike's place in Kent. They have like this giant Roman burger. It's unbelievable. They don't call it Roman burger. They call it something else, but it's all it's to die for, Dale. Yeah. And if you eat it, it could kill you.
Oh, well, then I want it.
Me too.
Hey, I guess in the food department, like mine.
I promised to tell a Gar story today. Talked to him the other day. Matter of fact, he called me today to make sure I had the right punchline. Anyway, of course, as we know, Gar served in the Navy, and now he served during the time of the Reagan administration, and the budgets got really, really tight during the Reagan administration to the point that they were actually inventorying bullets and counting them to make sure they had, and they were really tight with giving them out. So one day he was marched down to the range, and he was given. They were all given one bullet, just one bullet. If you hit the
Barney
target,
five.
Yeah, I'm telling you this. So if you hit the target, you got a second bullet. If you hit the target a second time, they sent you off to the infantry and made you a sharpshooter. If you didn't hit it the first time, they sent you to the optometrist and handed you a mop. So there you go.
A mop. Oh, Lord.
Guess which one Gar got? The mop. Yeah, he got the mop.
Yeah, he got the mop.
Hey,
oh, my goodness.
I have a couple stories about presidents and guns, and, of course, we know presidents are known about guns not because necessarily own them, but because they were shot by them. Anyway, James Garfield, the 20th president of the United States from Ohio here, was assassinated with a gun. The killer did something very strange when choosing the firearm to assassinate the president with. He purchased the gun that he thought would look good in a museum. The firearm actually did end up in a museum.
I'll be darned.
The next presidential story, this was a story of a gun not going so well. it involves President Andrew Jackson. President Jackson was nearly assassinated by a man who brought two pistols to kill him. Luck must have been on Jackson's side that day, however, when his would-be assassin, Richard Lawrence, tried to use his pistol. It misfired. Jackson, furious, proceeded to beat the flailed assassin with his cane. Lawrence managed to pull his second pistol, but it also wouldn't fire. Jackson's aides then wrestled him away.
So Jackson tried kicking his ass, huh?
He did. He was kicking his ass. Yes, he was.
Now that's the kind of president we need. Somebody who kicks
that's
ass
right.
Literally.
You know, well, it's like Teddy Roosevelt. I don't have this one sitting in front of him. When he was running for president his last time, this is after he became president because McKinley was shot. Then he ran one time, then he didn't run the second time, which he could have, and he didn't. He didn't like how William Howard Taft, which he had named essentially as his successor, didn't like how he was running the office. He ran against him. The two of them split the ticket, and Woodrow Wilson became president. But during the campaign, when the three of them were running, a would-be assassin fired and hit hit Theodore Roosevelt with a bullet.
Oh, no.
He refused to leave the podium, talked another 45 minutes before he left to go to the hospital. That's a tough man.
Yeah, yeah. Don't shoot Theodore. It's just going to tick him off.
Yep, exactly.
You're just going to get him angry. You know, he was an incredible.
And I have a few interesting gun facts that I can give, but why don't we give way to either the jukebox or a wheel?
I'll have a military bullet story of my own a little later, too.
Cool.
Yeah. But first, let me reach up to the top of the wheel and give it a tug.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Champion of the people, defender of the truth.
And say, what a neck and a rumble seat. At your district attorney's office, the wheels of justice are grinding in their relentless fashion.
Good morning, Mrs. District Attorney.
Oh, come in, Mr. Miller. Did you bring the files?
Yes, Chief.
Well, don't just stand there. Give me a manicure.
But I have some important news, Chief. We just caught a crook who stole 6 pair of silk stockings.
What nerve? What gall? What color? What size? Oh, never mind that small fry, Mr. Miller. I'm going after bigger game. The biggest racketeer in this town.
You mean?
Yes. Bristlebean Moore. I'll go out and get him if it's the last thing I do. I wonder what racket that rat is thinking up right now.
I'm telling you, there's a fortune in it, $1 million.
Are you sure about that, Bristlebean?
I'm positive. Just as sure as your name is Harry the Brain.
Huh? Oh, yeah, that is my name, ain't it?
Yes. Look, counterfeiting is foolproof if you do it right. When we got caught with those phony $5 bills, it was your fault.
Well, what did I do?
I told you 100 times, put on Lincoln's picture, not Superman's.
But I never read Lincoln.
Well, now this time we can't get caught. We're going to counterfeit pennies.
Whose picture is on them?
Lincoln's.
Well, here we go again.
Listen, you're wrong, Brain. It's a perfect plan. Who'd suspect that we'd counterfeit, of all things, pennies? And the best part of it is each phony penny will cost us only 2 cents to make.
Yeah, well, it costs you 2 cents to make a penny.
That's right.
Don't we lose money that way?
No, we fool around with the books. Here's the way we operate. We drive up to a drugstore, one of them big crowded drugstores with people rushing in and out.
So no one will notice us, huh, Bristlebean?
That's the idea. I park right outside and I keep the motor running, see? Then you dash into the drugstore.
Yeah.
And you weigh yourself free with a phony penny.
Oh, boy.
We've got to put a stop to this racket, Chief. Bristlebean's gone too far this time.
I'll say he has, Mr. Miller. Why, at a conservative estimate, he and his henchmen have weighed themselves free 400,000 times.
Well, can't we do anything, Chief?
Oh, I've tried everything, Mr. Miller. I even disguised myself as a scale and stood in the drugstore. I'm afraid it wasn't a very good disguise, though. I must have looked more like a pinball game.
What makes you think so?
Well, every guy who came along tried to tilt the machine. But I think I have an idea, Mr. Miller. And the next time Bristlebean Moore gets on a scale, he's going to get the surprise of his life.
Listen, Brain, I've been looking over the books for the past week. There's something wrong, Brain. You're not getting rid of enough pennies.
Well, I can't help it, Bristlebean. The pennies keep coming back.
They keep coming back?
Yeah. I'm starting to guess my weight now.
Well, it looks like I'll have to handle the whole job myself. Well, I'm going into that drugstore and get rid of those slugs. You wait outside here.
Well, there's the scale. Nobody's watching. Here goes. Well, must be out of order.
It's not out of order, Bristlebean. You weigh 162 pounds, and the jig is up.
Jeepers, the D.A.S. The D.A.S. herself. Why, I guess I might as well throw myself into your arms and give up.
You don't have to throw yourself into my arms.
Listen, don't tell me how to give up.
Well, Bristlebean, are you ready to talk?
Nothing doing. I ain't talking, see?
How would you like a little going over with the brass knuckles?
Nah, that won't make me talk.
I also carry a rubber hose.
That won't let me talk either.
Well, suppose I give you a little kiss.
Settle back. This could be a long story. If you want to know the story of my life, Mrs. D.A., perhaps I'd better read to you from my diary. Everything I've ever done is in this little book. Now, here, my dear, is my first entry. January 31st, 1915. Today I was born. Oh, and what an event. My mother, dear soul, took me up in her arms, looked down at the little bundle of love, and softly crooned, "Is you is or is you ain't a baby?"
But, Bristlebean, isn't there anything in your diary about your childhood pastime?
Well, yes. The entry for June 15th, 1924 says, "Today I discovered a new hobby that I think will last me all my life. Today, I joined the Campfire Girls."
Oh, now wait. What possible reason could you have for joining the Campfire Girls?
I was cold. Gee, I was fond of girls. And naturally, sooner or later, love was bound to kick me in the teeth. And I see by my diary that in 1930 it did.
What was her name?
Well, let me read to you from the diary. It says, July 1st, today I met Alice Honeygrease. July 2nd, I held her hand. July 3rd, I put my arm around her.
Oh, gee, what happened on July 4th?
Nothing. Legal holiday. But our love ripened, and I see by my diary that on July 18th, I took my love to the finest jewelry shop in town. Oh, this was the final step. There we stood looking at the window full of diamond rings. She pointed to a 3-carat solitaire, and I squeezed her tiny hand and said, "Grab it and run, the cops are coming!" And that Miss Rutherford, is how I started on my life of crime.
Oh, but don't stop now. I've got to know. Did you finally marry Alice?
Well, no, I didn't. But I would have married her if I could have gotten my family's consent.
You mean your mother and father objected?
No, my wife and kids.
Of course, spoofing Mr. District Attorney. That's cute. That's a fun one.
Yep. Gary Moore and Harry Von Zell, and I forget who the gal was, but yeah. Cute little parody there.
Yep. For the wheel.
Dan, why don't you tell us your little bit, your own gun story there?
Okay. I was in the Ohio National Guard, and of course you have to go to regular Army basic training. Okay. In Anniston, Alabama. Hot. Anyway, when you go out to the firing range, and this was just before the Reagan years, by the way, they were still trying to be economical, and you took your spent shells, you know, the empty casings, a lot of brass, it's a lot of metal. You would collect it in your helmet, and you dump it. There was a area where they collected it all to be recycled or repacked if they were still good, and you dumped it off. I went back to my barracks and was putting away all my gear, and I had noticed a live bullet, not a spent one, a live bullet had gotten stuck in the webbing of my helmet. I'm like, oh, God, I don't know what to do with it. So I rolled it up in my sock and About a half an hour later, an inspection was called, and sure enough, this sergeant went right for my locker, right for that sock. Somebody must have seen something and squealed or something. And he says, come to my office, and everybody's like, oh, God, we're never going to see him again. So the drill sergeant asked me what happened, you know, and I explained it, and he goes, well, you know, I called you out in front of all these guys. I do have to punish you. You know what I mean? He says, I believe your story. I don't think you were trying to smuggle away weaponry or anything like that. He goes, so while everybody else is free to make phone calls and run around, you know, we still had limited freedoms because we were in basic training, but run around the general area, you know, you're going to have to work in the day room and answer the phones. And then on his way out of the office, he goes, there's a good ball game on. So that my punishment was actually a reward. He liked me, I guess, apparently, because we didn't have TV privileges. In the day room, they had a TV, which we weren't allowed to go into unless you were working. And in the middle of the night, nobody's calling. So it was kind of a reward, not a punishment. It was nice. I felt that is how a leader should lead.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he could have been a total jerk and made my life hell. You know, and I...
Could he have booted you out for that?
What's that?
Could he have mustered you out for that? Could he have mustered you out for that?
I suppose if he really wanted to get me, he could have, I guess. I don't know. I would probably have to see, like, a liaison, you know what I mean, to see if you should get, like, legal representation. Because you have your... They have attorneys for you, just like in civilian life. If you do something wrong or you're accused of a crime or something internally in the service.
Yeah.
You still have the right to an attorney.
Yep. Well, that was a good thing. And it was, you know, a nice punishment you had there.
Well, I think this guy played it right. You know what I mean? Instead of. And he explained why he was doing what he was doing. Instead of saying, oh, okay, don't let it happen again. He says, well, I got to do something because I called you out in front of everybody.
Yeah. Because then he would look like, you know,
a softy.
A weak leader or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, a softy. And that you can't have that with a drill sergeant.
You cannot have that with a drill sergeant.
So that was kind of a neat little thing that happened to me.
A very cool bullet story. Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
I do have some interesting gun facts here, but perhaps we should go ahead and roll it over to the jukebox before we get to those.
All right. I think you paid last time. I can kerplunk a coin.
Okay.
What? I'll have a convert.
Oh, yeah.
And my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. I cast a bill of dream on. Yeah. Give me a kiss before you leave me. And my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Yeah, give me one thing before we part. I guess I will clergyman. When I'm alone with my fancies, I'll be with you. Oh, weaving romances, making believe they're true. Then give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Yes, give me what you alone can give. I guess there'll be lonely more. I make it believe that's true. Yes, lend me your chops for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Yes, give me what you alone can give. I can't stop it, I dream on.
Hi there, fella. What you say? This is little Fat Swallow, my mother's 285 pounds of jam jive and everything. They got me in on this V-Disc mess here this afternoon, so here it is. Watch out. One of my own compositions ain't misbehaving, and I ain't either. On the elevation, on the shelf, ain't misbehaving. Saving my love for you, and you, especially you, yeah. I know for certain, the one I love, I'm through with flirting, it's you that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, saving all my love for you. Like that horner in a corner, don't go nowhere. What do I care? Your kisses are worth waiting for. Believe me, I don't stay out late, no place to go. I'm home about 8 at my little radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you, for you, for you, yes, you. All my love for you. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. And now, something soft, something quiet, very sentimental. Too sloppy, no, too sleepy people. I always get that slop and sleep mixed up. Look out.
more. Get this, get this. All right. Something's tickling me. I don't know what it is, but it is. Maybe some scotch I had last night.
A shotgun wedding to rent this mess and get a piece of rest. Well, here we are, just about the same foggy little fellow, busy little day, two sleepy people by dawn's early light, too much in love to say good night. Good night.
That's right. Well, we had Fats Waller, and before that,
the great Louis Armstrong. Yeah, and you know what? When I was in New Orleans, I was told, whether it's true or not, the story he got, how the nickname Satchmo. Played as a Ute. He played on the streets, and people would throw him nickels. And people would reach down and grab his nickels before he could. So he started to swoop them up as they played them, threw it into his mouth, and back. Actually, they meant the original term was sack mouth, and it turned into Satchmo. Story I got. And I'm
all right, next week we're going to the hospital. We might as well. We're all in pieces, parts between Gar and Dave and myself. We're aging and falling apart. Hopefully, CW is doing well. We miss you this weekend, CW.
Right. 2 weekends in a row. Come on, girl. Come on back.
Yeah.
If we said something, we're sorry.
Yeah. I'm not really.
And believe me, we're two of the sorriest characters out there.
I'm not really sorry. No, we got Life of the Luigi, The Shadow, Theater 5, and then Saturday it's more CBS Radio Mystery Theater. That's next weekend, starting 6:30 Friday. Farewell, adieu, our theaters, and goodbye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Okay, I'll bring a date.
Can you dig it?
He'll bring a date and dig one up. So I was a little off time there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. So since we had them, and as a bonus to our archive listeners, here's some fun gun facts. We're going to give those here.
Oh, okay.
Who knows when we'll have our next gun show, so we're going to give those here. Let's see. Taser. Do you know what Taser stands for? It's an acronym. You know what that stands for, Dale?
No.
It's short for Thomas A. Swift's Electric Rifle.
Oh.
That's what the fact says.
Oh,
okay.
Darn.
Here's a great one. Russian astronauts take guns into space to protect themselves against bears if they land off course.
Wait a minute. Going back to Taser, I know what it stands for. Don't be an idiot and listen to the cop.
Yes. Yes.
That's what it stands for.
Here's one. In Arizona, it's legal for any citizen to carry a gun, but it is illegal to carry nunchucks. There is only one legally operated gun store in all of Mexico.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yep.
Let's go.
Let's see. The Soviet Union designed a machine gun, the GSH 630, with such a recoil that it damaged the plane it was mounted to. Fuel tanks ruptured, parts fell off, and electric circuits took damage. At least 3 crashes were attributed to just using this gun.
Oh, those crazy Russians.
In 1986, the price of an AK-47 in a town in Kenya was 15 cows. By 2005, the price had dropped to just 4 cows.
Oh, thank goodness. A little cow inflation there.
And let's see. The company Daisy Outdoor Products sold windmills and gave a complimentary BB gun with every purchase. The BB guns became so popular, they stopped selling windmills and started selling BB guns. And so now you know where Daisy, the BB guns came from.
That is an amazing fact. I like that one.
That's pretty cool. And I have just one more factoid in my hand, Dale.
Uh-oh.
And this can be backed up with an award. In 2000, a man from Houston, Texas, killed himself whilst playing Russian roulette with a semi-automatic weapon. He didn't realize this type of weapon automatically chambered a round and the gun was cocked. He later won a Darwin Award. Anyway, those are some fun gun factoids.
I know. I say let people have guns. What the hell? Let Darwin and nature take its toll.
let deer and bear have guns. Let them give them a fighting chance, you know?
Yeah, I'm for that too. Yeah. See how many people.
Now that would make hunting a sport. That would make hunting a sport.
How many guys would give up if they knew the game could shoot back?
So true.
I like it. Would make for good television.
Oh my.
Yes, sorry. So I'm just hoping everybody had a good week.
Hey, at least I know I had a good weekend thanks to Erie House Radio. And hopefully everyone else listening in did too.
Yep. Don't stop. We have more. Lots more.
Did you see that our good old Bob had mentioned he would record in Mystery Theaters along with Hearts of Space episodes?
Oh, okay.
And I asked him what that was, and it is something that still exists today. It is... Hearts of Space is slow music for fast times. Welcome to the world's most lovingly curated collection of ambient space and contemplative music from around the world and across the centuries. A resource for calm, concentration, and deep listening since 1983. This is at hos.com. You don't have to put the www in there. You can, but you don't have to. So it's hos.com. If you want to listen to any of those wonderful sound bites and stuff and music that a good old Bob was telling us about.
That sounds very therapeutic.
Yeah, so it's not good for you and I, but other than that, yeah.
No, we're beyond therapy, gang, let me tell you. There's just no hope.
We've lost more therapists than you can believe.
Yeah. They see us, they go running. That's sissies.
Yep. That DOS is true. DOS is true.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I think I'm going to sign off here to go check out Gar's brand new rerun. And I'm sure you got some things going on there. That
I am going to throw a suggestion his way.
Okay.
Here, if he takes you up on – if he takes me up on this, okay?
Okay.
This is an exclusive for folks listening in the archive. To keep his spirits up, if he's up to it, he should host silent movies and do the skits like a silent movie. How about that?
Oh, that would be interesting.
I bet he could do it. He has the skills.
Yeah, he has problem concentrating on a computer monitor, though.
Ah.
That's part of the problem, too.
Oh, okay. So, I thought it was strictly the voice thing.
No. The voice thing is a big thing, but he becomes violently ill staring at the computer for too long.
Oh, golly, yeah, that's no good.
That only happens to me on Facebook.
Yeah. All you gotta do is skim for a little while, and it's like, oh, I want to retch. I think I'm going to retch.
Yeah. But give him a suggestion. That would be cool. If he's up to it, he could do that when he wouldn't have to use his voice.
I'm gonna throw down and see if he... If he goes for it, it'd be a good diversion for him, you know?
Yeah.
And a way to exercise the creative juices and such.
He cannot wait to get back doing his show and doing our show. He misses being part of this. I keep sending him the program.
We miss him terribly. We miss him terribly.
We do. And all we can say is we always do every time we talk to him and every time we don't. Gar, get better. Get better
yes.
for you. Get better for right. us and for all of our listeners and all your viewers. Get better.
Yeah, more for us, but.
Yeah, more for us, yeah.
I'm kidding. We love you, big guy. We love you. Get well.
Or else. With that said, I think it's time to turn down the house lights, turn up the three spotlights. So into the middle spotlight can step the one, the only, Mr. James Durante.
Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Up we sing, and
ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Good night already. Oi.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
Good night already.
Now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
Next time, don't bring the kids.